Now we start at the top of Ayin here. Hey, Amud Aleph, by the Mishnah. So lo yomar adam lechaviro, hilvani kuchitim, v'anitain lecha d'goren. I can't say to a person, lend me a kuchitim, then I'll repay you at the goren. So that is what we've been discussing until this point, what's called sa'ab sa'ah. Right? One's not allowed to exchange in a quasi barter manner, that he offers to return whatever produce that he is accepting as a loan up front. He can't return it later on because of the possibility that the market pricing, which in their day was the likelihood that the market pricing would go up on the item, and therefore he would be repaying him a higher amount. But he can't say to him, which is what we quoted earlier, right, in the Perek, which is that a person is allowed to say, you can lend me something until my son comes or until I find the keys. So that in that case, we discussed earlier in Tarka Zahav and other places, that in those instances, we assume since he has in his possession, there's a technical item that's preventing him from getting access to the sa'ah, that we permit him to lend in, or to borrow in that instance against that which he already owns. The way Rashi phrases it is that habasab sa'ah dirabananhu, that it's only dirabanan, it's avak ribit, v'cheyesh lo lo gozor, if he has, then we're not gozer in those instances. So here where he has it, and there's a technical difficulty in accessing it, then they allowed him to borrow. Now, v'hilel oser. And Hillel says, no, even in that instance, you can't do it. V'cheney olomer. Hillel said in addition to that, which becomes almost an extreme form, is lo tove isha kikar lechavata, that a woman should not lend to her friend a loaf of bread or dough, until they actually determine the monetary value of what they are she's lending. Therefore, what we just saw at the end of the Gemara before the Mishnah, that once you've assigned a monetary value to it, then you can return either the item or the monetary value, but then there won't be a vak repeat because it can't exceed the value of what she borrowed. Shema yukru chitim v'nim tzubodli de repeat. Because maybe, again, the price of chitim would go up in value. If that's the case, then she's returning her an item that is worth more than what she borrowed, and it'll be a vak repeat. So Hillel says that's extended beyond just the what we call it to be like transactions, but even neighborly exchanges would be included in this gzera of a vak repeat.
Right, but the case for the woman, she does not have bread. She may have chitim. She may have chitim, but she doesn't. But she has the bread.
Right.
So, but she doesn't have the bread.
Right.
So what's the chiddush that Hillel is telling us? He's saying because you might have thought since it's between neighbors.
Right. Exactly.
There's
that they didn't extend it. It's not a business type of transaction. It's clearly not a transaction when someone's trying to earn money or earn repeat. It's just that, you know, your neighbor asks you for eggs, you give him back eggs, you know, a week later. If the price of eggs changes, were you thinking about the vak ribit? Does it look like a vak ribit? Probably not.
You had there, right? This is like yetzar shar.
Not necessarily. Where do you see yetzar shar?
Well, shatase damim is...
Shatase damim is not necessarily yetzar shar. It means that the price, you give a monetary value to the loan rather than it being a in-kind exchange. Problem with the vak ribit in sa'avasa'a is that you give back produce, and the produce's value could change. But if you sign a value to the produce up front, then there can't be any change because she can pay, like we saw the last Gemara here, she can pay either the lower of the produce or the value, the cash value of whatever it is. So then she can never be paying more than she got.
Why does it say lechem? Why does it change from chitim to lechem?
Because the price of lechem is determined by the price of chitim. Why else would lechem price change? I mean, you go into the major factor in bread pricing is going to be the raw material. Chitim fluctuate, and that's why bread would fluctuate. Right. So now, this is something we discussed earlier. Tosfos actually quoted this in the Gemara earlier about the issue of if you can borrow, when you can borrow, when we say sa'ah, that you can borrow against what you already have. Right. Tosfos quoted earlier is how much do you have to have, or the possibility that you don't have to have the entire amount of what you, of that which you are borrowing. So here we have this machlokas in terms of whether you have to have the full amount or not the full amount. So over here it says, Rav Huna yesh lo sa'ah loves sa'ah satayim loves satayim. So Rav Huna says it's a one-for-one exchange. A one-for-one exchange is that whatever you have, you can lend against. So that's something that we discussed earlier. I think Shaul once formulated nicely that a person here is, in terms of market exposure, he has no market exposure. He's lending against something that he has. And therefore, any fluctuation in the prices, he's already managed that risk by having it in his possession. The way Rashi describes it in many places, we try to describe it, is that we give it, it's as if given to the mocher. It's as if the mocher is taking possession of the item that's with you. And therefore, any increase in the market price of that item, is in possession of the mocher, in possession of the person who lent you, the lender of the item to you, and therefore whatever you're giving back to them is already his, and you're not paying him in excess. So therefore, that's why if you have an offsetting number, we don't worry about it. So we discussed at the time that a person, even if they have one sa'ah, they can borrow numerous sa'ot on top of that one sa'ah. So now, why is it that you can, on one sa'ah, a person can go ahead and borrow numerous sa'ot? So Rashi describes it over here. Rashi says that, what happens in an instance where he lent? He has one sa'ah, and he lends a sa'ah against it. Then he goes ahead and he eats the sa'ah that he borrowed, because he was lent that sa'ah, he could do whatever he wants with it. And then afterwards he decides to eat the sa'ah, his original sa'ah that he has in his possession. Right, now he eats the sa'ah that's in his possession. Is the loan that he made originally, is the borrowing that he did originally, is that illegal? Is that problematic? No. Because when he borrowed it, he had it in his possession. Do we demand of him to pay back the exact sa'ah that was in his possession? No. I just say, if he has a sa'ah in his possession, then it doesn't look like sa'ah, and we say, fine. Even though he can eat it, and he can not return this exact sa'ah, having a sa'ah in his possession is sufficient to lend. So based on that, Rashi says, well, if you can lend on that one sa'ah, then eat it, and it's not a problem. So the same thing, you can land on that one sa'ah, borrow on that sa'ah, and then afterwards, after you finish borrowing, you take another loan on that same sa'ah. Because had you eaten it, it would have been fine, it wouldn't affect the first loan. So too, when you borrow against this sa'ah again, it shouldn't affect the first loan that you already took. But what would be the issue? In your mind, you start thinking about that, you could see a situation, based on the way Rashi is describing it, there could be a limitation. What could be that limitation? That means at any given time, you can't borrow more than you have in your possession. I mean, that the way Rashi is describing it is that you can borrow up to what you have in your possession. Once you borrowed it, then you can borrow again against that same amount. But in the first instance, or in any instance when you're borrowing, can you borrow in excess of what is in your possession? So that turns out to be a machlokas, the Rivan and Tosfos over here. It says, Venira, if you see in Tosfos here, Venira, the Hashra Kaimelon Krob Yitzchak. We hold like that. The Bryce of Rabbi Chaim Isai, we're going to see in a second the Bryce helps him. V'rivan perish. D'biyachad ein yachol avot el k'mo sheyesh lo. That you can't borrow at any given time, you can't borrow them more than in excess of what's in your possession. U'b'zeach hazeh daf kashari. Only if you do it in a sequential manner is it mutar. Right? Based on the dispensation that Rashi included over here, is that the dispensation is that each moment, once you've borrowed against it, then you've taken care of the tekanat chachamim, or the gzeret chachamim, not to do it in such a manner. If that's the case, then you can borrow again against that same item. Umihu, bahamo de rivan, even the rivan agrees, that filo yiten lo b'yachad, v'yomer k'nei b'zeach hazeh, shari. That even if he lends him all in one shot, more in excess than what he has, but he tells him to take possession of it, in a sequential manner, that would work as well. We don't have to literally be that. And then Tosa says, mihu nira
de...
Yes.
We know he's going to do that as long as he does it.
So Benjamin, he says, look, I'm lending you 100, you only have 50, just take possession of it in two sets of 50. So that will work. Tosfos Nira says, Mio Nira de Interich Leductig. Says, you don't have to be a Leductig, and it's fine. He doesn't think that this issue of Zech HaZeh is so relevant that you could do it even in one shot. And the basic principle that you have to say is that, so Rashi quotes over here, Shaloi Chmir Leductig Bisur Sav Sa Kokach. I mean, that when it came to Sav Sa, as long as there's some sort of indication that he's not lending it in order to get the repeat, and there's some sort of offsetting factor, the Rabbanan would not go there in that instance, whether even if it's an excess of the amount that the person is holding in his hand, if he borrows more than he has in his hand. So now the Gemara says, Tnit, Nei Rab Chia, the Su'ir the Rabbi Yitzchak, Chia's Mishnah, or Brisa that was on our Mishnah, helped Rabbi Yitzchak. Why? He says, Tipat Yayin Ein Lo, Tipat Shem Ein Lo. that if he doesn't have any wine, or if he doesn't have any shemen, then he may not borrow. Hayeshlo. If he had, lovela kamatipim. That if you're suggesting that he has drops of wine or drops of shemen, obviously he's not borrowing little drops of shemen, just wine, he's borrowing a larger quantity. But Reb Chiya's qualification is as long as he has drops of wine or drops of shemen in his possession, that'll be enough to borrow the larger amount, which would be like Rabbi Yitzchak. But Hillel Ozer, Hillel says that it's not permitted. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Shmuel. Halacha k'divrei Hillel. Halacha is like Hillel. V'lei tilchu to kalate. So despite the fact that Rav Nachman Shmuel says that halacha is like Hillel, halacha is not like Hillel over here. And again, that's I have to say that the Chachamim were not gozer. They didn't extend their gzeirah of avat ripit to the extent that it would affect neighborly relationships or neighborly relations, because in that instance, it's not, clearly not a business transaction. A person's not trying to be marviach on their friend. They're lending them, a cup of sugar, eggs. They're not trying to create a avat ripit. It doesn't even look like a avat ripit. It seems to be it's a loan that really doesn't. Person in many senses would even, if the person didn't even return it, they wouldn't be so mapid. Right? This is something that people do one for the other without any consideration of the pricing. So now, Gemara says, V'chein haya hilal omer lo tovei isha. Amir amir Shmuel, zu divrei hilal. Aval chamim omrim, lavim stam uforam stam. That you don't have to worry about it. Just borrow and pay back without any, right, any consideration of what you are doing or pricing of what you are doing. So I think it's just interesting here that Rav Nachman quoted the name of Shmuel, halachah k'divrei Hillel. Then over here, you have Rav Yehuda, the name of Shmuel, saying, zu divrei Hillel, which is clearly indicating that the halachah would not be like, wait, because chachamim umrim, right? Lavim stam uforim stam. Which might have been what pushed the Gemara to say, leitit chatuk avate, right? That the halachah is not like that. So I'm Rav Yehuda, Rav Shmuel. So, b'nei chabura makpidim zel zeh. B'nei chabura is a group of individuals who are either staying in one location, that are in moving around together, traveling together, but they're makpid zel zeh. They are careful and exacting about that which they borrow from one another and that which they split when they divide up. For instance, they go eat food, they're at the table and they put out, five berekas, and then they measure each bereka and they make sure that each one gets exactly the same size and, right, that type of hakpodah. So in that instance, if there was done on Yom Tov, over mishum mida, ushum mishkal, umishum minyan. That they are over in these instances, mida measuring, mishkal weighing, umishum minyan, and then enumerating. Umishum lavim uporim biyom tov. And for borrowing and repaying on yom tov. So they will be in violation of all these isurim. Tosfos, a lot of tosfotim here spend time explaining that truthfully on yom tov, that their interactions are really not asur. That if you go ahead, and Tosu says that the Gemara in many places in Beit Zak gives dispensations for borrowing on Yom Tov, or having interchange or interactions with neighbors and other people on Yom Tov, where you are borrowing and exchanging and so on and so forth. But the problem over here is that makpidim zel zeh. That the issue here is that the hakpadah changes the dynamic of that exchange. That if they were not makpid, then fine, go ahead, that's not a problem. But when they are makpid, then it changes the transaction. They do this during the weekday also, and then they're going to come to, like for instance, Levim Purim, that they're going to lend something out, they're going to come to write it down, right? The Isur and Yom Tov and Shabbat from borrowing and paying back is because for them it's all transactional. They look at everything in an exacting manner, becomes much more transactional. Also with Mida, counting something out. So on Yom Tov, you can get, you have a friend, you say, can I borrow 10 eggs? So you're allowed to say that. You're allowed to borrow 10 eggs on Yom Tov. Nobody says that counting out the eggs is a problem. But because their hakpadah is, if you take 10 eggs, you're going to have to pay back 10 eggs, then it becomes almost transactional rather than simply a nice neighborly exchange. Wow. Now, if you add into that, divrei Hillel, af mishum ribit. If you come to the Hillel, then you also have ribit, because if they are makpid, one and the other, in an exacting manner, then you have that problem exactly that when they return it, they're going to check on the, right, to make sure, to ensure that's exactly that. If the pricing of the produce went up, then you have a problem because you have a vak repeat over here. Amar Rav Huda.
If someone comes to our house to borrow a hard-boiled egg, right, mash into an egg salad or something, so we should say, yeah, just take it, keep it.
Yeah, Tosu spends time on this about this hakpada. He does say that stam bnei adam. It's interesting. Tosu says later on that the stam bnei adam are makpidim zelze, but there's a difference about chabura. He says that even though stam bnei adam are makpid, But nevertheless, by chabra, because they interact during the week like this, and they interact on Yom Tov like this, they're not going to differentiate the way they acted during the week than they did on Yom Tov, and they're going to come to do the same things that they did during the week, and then they're going to do it during Shabbos, with the tichol, business transactions. That's the issue. And I don't think here, when it's one-off lending to a neighbor, that one we have to worry about saying, we're not makbid.
Also, they're talking about, since they're eating at one table, the payback, the tiron is going to be on Shabbos also.
Seems like it. I would agree.
If it's going to be during the week, then...
Right. I don't think... I think that B'nei Machabura Makpidim here, that's the issue. That's what Tosafot points out. It's the Chabura aspect of it, rather than the Makpid aspect of it. All right, so now... It's an unbelievable statement here. Chachamim can borrow from each other with interest. My time, how come? Me the yode, the ribit asura. They know that ribit is asura. Umatanahu the yoyiva dodi. They're really gifting to each other that excess amount. Samuel Shmuel Avua Bar Ihi Ilvani. His father, he says, Bar Ihi lent me mea pilpulim, be mea asarin pilpulim. That he lent me, right, 100 peppers, back for 100 and, 20 pilpulim, barich, and it was good, no problem. Interesting, I should point out in this parak, that generally we say by Talmid Chachamim, the Gemara did mention it the other day, that Adam Choshuv Shaini, that was in Rav, when he could have taken 6 back, he took 5, because he wanted Adam Choshuv Shaini, he wanted to have, within the Pnim Yishrut Adin, because he was Adam Choshuv. But this parak is replete with exceptions for Talmid Chachamim. There's an omission, explicit Mishnah, before, what we said before, about the ability to lend to Nachrim be Ribit. The Gemara says you're not allowed to lend to Nachrim beribit or Barfim beribit because of Shema Yomod Mimasav. The Gemara there accepts Talmid Chachamim. That's okay. And over here again, the Gemara accepts Talmid Chachamim to lend Echad L'Sheni beribit. So it's just an interesting parak here that the Talmid Chachamim here are being led to Kula in many instances with ribit rather than the Chumrah, which we would normally see by Adam Choshuv Shaini, Fnim Yishur Tadin over here. The Gemara in this parak is mekil the gabi ribit because of their assume that the Gemara believes, and that's what Gemara is saying over here, that the Chamei Chachamim knew about ribit, they understood ribit, and they clearly understood the Isur involved, and therefore they wouldn't, or limud masav. But when it came to the Hamunam, if you allowed certain dispensations, people would not be so differentiating between kifs versus interest, right? Limud masav in achri. Although I still think it's unusual in this parak to have such a concept where we're always mekel on the Talmid Chachamim when it comes to these issues of ribit.
Is anything here? There's a mechila between both sides.
Right. So what David's saying about the mechila is interesting. Tosfos points out over here that this idea of ribit in Talmid Chachamim is only bedavar muat. Maybe in small items. That if they take it's a large sum of money and they take it, I got a 10% gift on that, which would be excessive. That would be considered ribit and not a gift, because what David explained is that by Mechila, that they have their small gifts between each other, small token gifts, that's fine.
Why do we even say sometimes we say even you can't even say thank you to someone who
loves the Mishnah, we're going to say in a second. There's a Mishnah coming up in a second.
Why do you say Mechila? That's Kavachoma that there's
not. We'll see the qualification by the Mishnah, why that's a problem. But over here, at least, it seems to be that what you're expressing about Mechila is right, because the Tos is limited to Dover Malat. Which would be something that people would give, gifts, nice little thing, a token gift to someone, but not that they are actually paying some sort of relationship between what they're gifting and the value of the loan that they took out. It's just whatever small amount that they're giving as a gift back. Now, Amar Yehuda Amar Shrav, this is the name of Rav instead, and Mutar Lo Adam Lavot Banav Bnei Beito Beribit, who's going to lend to his own family with interest, but Kedei Lamim Timam Dam Beribit, right, because to let them taste the taste of Beribit, they should understand how difficult ribit is, meaning that when someone is charged ribit, the difficulty of the accruing of the interest, and also the other side of it, which is that they should know that the isur involved, despite the fact that it gains the one who lends out the money, but the one who is borrowing is put into a definite tsar and difficult circumstances, and the onus is gadol, that they should understand that. So the lab miltihi, the Gemara says, no way, mishum da'atim the misrach. Because they would come to make a mistake. Because they'll see the two sides, right? The one side is the tsar of the borrower. But they see the value, the great profits that the lender is making. So start seeing that prophet, there'll be chumed that want to lend in that manner in order to profit. And therefore we say, don't even open up the Pandora's box when it comes to lending the repeat, because we're afraid of what will come about it. It reminds me of the Rabbeinu Yonah on the Avot. So there, we discussed this earlier about sheker, times that you're allowed to lie. Right, so we discussed it there, that Rabbeinu Yonah has a statement that a person is not allowed to even lie in a joke, or in any circumstance whatsoever, because a person should not be lamed l'shono the sheker. He cannot even, if he teaches himself to speak sheker, if he does it in a joking manner, that will influence the way he speaks even in other circumstances. And therefore, a person has to be machik min sheker in any instance, in any interaction, because you don't want to even touch sheker. So the same thing over here, we don't even want you to touch repeat because of its influence or its impact on one's life in other areas. Okay, Mishnah. Omer adam lechaviro, nacheshi mi, v'nacheshi mcha. You know, basically, weed with me, and I'll weed with you. Adura mi, you know, hoe with me, turn over the soil with me, v'dorim cha, and I'll do it with you. V'lo yomar lo, you cannot say, nacheshi mi, v'dorim cha. You know, weed with me, and I'll hoe with you, or adura mi, weed with, hoe with me, v'nacheshi mcha, and I will, right, weed with you. Because we don't know, meaning that there's one malacha is harder than the other malacha. And so the exchange here is not an equal exchange. It's an exchange where the values might be, right, off. If the values are off, then it looks like he is paying him back. And again, if he does it the same day, there's nothing to talk about. But if he does it today, and he says, listen, you'll weed with me, and then in a month from now, you'll come and hoe with me. So what's the problem? When he weeded with him, he really owes him schar for helping him out. He really owes him money for weeding him out. So what does he do? He's deferring the schar until a later date. So when he defers the schar to a later date, what's the exchange? I'll come and hoe with you. Or I'll come and weed with you. Now, if that is more expensive, it would cost him more money to do it later. What does it look like? He deferred the schar that he should have gotten for helping him out, and therefore pays him back with something that's higher, with a melacha that has a higher value. He's paying interest for the deferral of the schar pilula, for the wages that he should have compensated him. Now, koyim egrid echad, when it comes to the entire grid, grid is from the word, from a solid, or right when the Noach comes out of the teva, and then the aris nasek grid, it means that the top became solid, or had like a layer of solidness on it. So that's over here, grid is in the summertime, when the land is all hard. And, right, so in that time, all the summer months are the same, and koyim egrid echad. And then the rainy season is also one. What does that mean? That if I say to you, weed with me now, and you know I'll weed with you, and as long as it's all within the same season, I mean it's summer or winter, that's fine. What we don't allow you is to go from season to season, because in the winter season, it's significantly harder to do the work than it is to do it in the summer season. So that's exactly that example. I'll plow with you during the summertime, and you'll plow with me during the wintertime. Right, Rabban Gamliel Omer, Yesh Ribit Mukdemet, Veyesh Ribit Mukheret. So again, this is something that we bumped into earlier in the Gemara about this idea that one can have Ribit even outside the context of the loan. Now, we had that problem with 2 days ago with Rava when he used to accept, with Papa, when he used to accept gifts, the people that on the banks of the river, they used to give him Kufita afterwards, right? I'm sorry, Ravina used to give them, and they used to give him a little Kufita afterwards, a gift afterwards. So Tosfos says over there, what about the fact that it's ribit mukheret? That even though they're paying him after the close of the loan, we see in this Mishnah, Rav Gamliel says that ribit mukdemet, ribit mukheret, even if it's outside the context of the loan, still classified as interest. So Tosfos says, how come over there, this is not classified as ribit mukheret? So the answer is, because of what he says now. Kate said, what is ribit mukdemet ribit? Natanei da'avil votemenu v'hu mishaleach lo. He wants to borrow money from him, and therefore he sends him a gift in order to engender or to convince him to lend the gift. So then he specifically says, I'm sending the gift in order that this person will lend me. Right? He rebuked Mukdemet. That's rebuked Mukdemet. He borrowed from him, paid it back. Right? Because of the monies that you left me that were, you know, you lost the opportunity that was with me, here's a gift. So clearly what he does over here is mikasher between the gift and the loan. He makes some sort of connection between the two, and because of that connection, that's what makes it repeat the mukdemet or mukheret. So that's what Tosfos says back on Ein Gimel Mikvet. When he used to be shachar leitvei, he says, Ein zeh repeat mukheret, when I gave him a little gift afterwards. Why? Shelo hayu maskirim shnotnim b'shvil ma'utav sheyu b'telim etzlam. They never mention the fact that it was because of the money that they lent him. As Rashi explains over here. But that's why you can have a gift given afterwards. But if it's not attached to loan, it's not right connected to this loan, then it'll be classified as a gift. Whereas if it's specifically connected to the loan itself, then you can't do it because then it becomes repeat milcheret and repeat mukdemet if it's prior to that fact.
When does it mean it's not verbally attached to the loan? Or
it seems to me.
Mind?
It seems that he has to say that he actually has to articulate.
Yes.
I would say if you give it right after the loan, which is why I probably said it was asur, is that there's no umdana that's connected to the loan. I mean, that even if you don't articulate it, it's clearly connected to the loan. You have to give some distance so that it's not connected to the loan, right? That's Shimon Omer, Yesh Ribit Dvarim. So this is what you were asking about, David. There is Ribit Dvarim. Lo Yomar Lo Da Ki Ba Ish Ploni. You can't offer up to someone lending you money. Hey, listen, this guy's coming to town now. Mimakom Ploni. Ve'elu Ovrim Velo Tase. So that's, first of all, David, that's what you were just saying before. That even a person who says something or gives him information that he otherwise wouldn't have given to him before, that's already considered like Ribit. It doesn't have to actually be monetary gifting. Now, Elu Ovrim Velo Tase. These are the ones that violate, we had earlier, right, in the Perek, which is, these are the ones that violate the Lotase. Malve, Valove, Hare, Vaidim, all of them violate the Lotase. Chomim, Omrim, Afa Sofer, even the Sofer. Now they're over in Mishum, what are they over for?
Who?
Oh, that's a good question, we don't know yet, we'll see that in the Gemara, who? Okay, Omrim, Shom, so now one we have is, Et Kaspucha, Lotitein Lo Beneshech, Ubermarbit Lotitein Ochlecha, so that's the first Yisur that mentions here, Lotitein. Which is found, right, that's in Vayikra. Then you have the next, the pasuk before in Vayikra, which is actually, Al tikach mito neshech v'tabit, v'yiretam elokecha, v'yarek v'cheach v'chaimach. So that's the second lav. Umishom, this is from in Mishpatim, which is in keset avet, mit ani imach, lo tia lo kenoshe, right, that you cannot be an oppressor to him, so that's the third yisur. Umishom, and the next couple words in that pasuk is, lo tisimun alav neshech. Don't place on him neshech. So those four are the isurim. Umishum, the fifth isur is lifnei iver lo titen michshol. Right, that there's an isur of lo titen lifnei iver lo titen michshol. V'yareitam lekecha niyashem. So those are five isurim. As David asks, who is in violation of these isurim? We'll have to see. The Gemara will enumerate each isur according to whom. Satan, Yerub Shimon Yochai Omer Minan Anoshe B'chavir Omaneh V'ein Ragil Lakdil Lom Shalom. Person who lent him money and normally he would not greet him. Then it's asur from him at this point to start greeting such an individual. That it says in the pasuk, right? Right in the Dvarim, lo tashich le'achicha neshech kesef, neshech ochel, neshech kol davar asher yishach. So kol davar is both everything which we saw before in the Gemara, but also here he's now kol davar, he's saying kol dibur, right? Even a simple speech, simple interaction that before was not happening between you, and now it's happening because of the loan, that is considered to be repeat. The malveh is in violation of all those that are enumerated in the Mishnah, but the loveh, on the other hand, is over mishum. So these are not mentioned in our Mishnah. These are the psukim from Devarim, as we did earlier in the parak. Remember, we divided up. Why do we need both psukim? Why do we neshek twice? Why do we need marbit twice? One is for the malveh and one is for the loveh. So the psukim and the loveh are found in Dvarim, which is lo tashich le'achicha. So what we just quoted, Rabbi Yochanan was just quoting that. Rabbi Shimon Yochanan, I'm sorry, was just quoting that. And manachri tashich ulachicha lo tashich. So those are the yisurim on the loveh. So the loveh has both of those yisurim, which is lo tashich le'achicha, ulachicha lo tashich. And he also has the lifnei iver lo titen michshol. So both the malveh and the loveh have lo lifnei iver lo titen michshol for the other party, right? Because they're causing the other party to pay interest or to receive interest in this instance. Now, arei ve'edim, eino v'rim el v'shim lo tisimun alav neshech. That the arei ve'edim are only in violation of lo tisimun alav neshech. So if you remember before, when we discussed this in the Gemara, right, Gedalia, you mentioned this, when we said lo tisimun alav neshech, means from the word sima, the place. Right, so that even at the moment, the placement of the loan, at the time that the loan is created, there's a violation of Isur, of lo tisimun alav neshech. So the placement of the loan, the creation of the loan, there's a violation of Isur at that moment in time. That's simat halva'a. So simat halva'a applies both to the malven loveh, but also to the arev nedim who are ma'afsher. Right, they are facilitators of the loan. And since they are facilitators of the loan, they're also in violation of lo tisimun alav neshech. So those show, we just said before, by the malven loveh, that there's an additional Isur of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshula. What about the Edim and the Arev? Why are they in violation of not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshula? The answer is, it says Lo Psikole. It's not always that they'll be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshula. If they could, the person would have found other Edim, right? If he would have been able to, he would have lent without the Edim anyway. And the Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshula is only if you were a facilitator where it otherwise would not have happened. And we know from the Gemara and Avodah Zarah and other places, which is what's called Treya Avrei Denaro. It has to be something where he's on the other side of the riverbank, and you are facilitating his ability to do the Isur. Without you, it would not be able to happen. But when you're on the Chad Avrei Denaro, on the same bank of the river, the person could have done it himself, or someone else could have helped him, then there's no violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshul. Tosa is Mechadesh, and Gemara and Shabbos, beginning of the first parak there, that there might be Misayel over Avera. Even though there's no Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshul, there still might be another Isur, a violation of helping people to do the wrong thing. But that's not a violation of the Isur D'oraisa of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshul. So therefore, it doesn't mention Lifnei Iver by the Arev and the Edim. Okay, now the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Malvei Bit, Yomer Mashim Rabbi Chima Efsidim. Then those that lend out with interest lose more than they gain. And that's what we saw before, that Hochim Imit Motitim, right? That their possessions dwindle over time when they lent out with Ribit. So here, all the benefit he gets up front by charging interest, he'll lose in the end by all his money disappearing. This is Lashon Saginor. They make Moshe Rabbeinu into a Chacham and a Torah being true. Why? If Moshe really knew how good it was to lend with interest and how much money you can make, he would never have written that in the Torah. Because he just didn't understand how good it is to lend with interest. That's why he wrote it in the Torah. So basically, the idea that they're Kofer Batorah, which says that, right, the Torah says don't lend with interest, and they go ahead and lend with interest. It's as if they're saying, ah, oh, they didn't really understand that. You know, we know better to lend with interest.
Of course, it's saying that Moshe made it up himself rather than it coming from Hashem.
Okay. Okay, could say it that way. Right, neither way is good. Kiyata Rav Dimi Amar, Minayim L'Noshe B'Chaviro Maneh, B'Yodeh She'in Lo, Shasu La'Afor L'Fanah. This is an amazing restriction here. That a person has lent money to his friend and knows that he doesn't have the ability to pay it back, how do you know that he shouldn't walk in front of him? That there's a restriction to be, right, demanding, oppressed, depressed, to put pressure on the individual. So if you know that the person doesn't have it, and you keep walking in front of them and looking at them and saying, they know that's what you're looking for, and that causes them duress, that is, right, not permitted. One can't place duress onto an individual in order to have the loan repaid.
It's a difficult halacha.
It is difficult.
Because for someone who owes you money, and you said he would give it back by a certain date.
Right.
So what are you supposed to do now? So you know he doesn't have, so he doesn't have the money.
Right.
I think
if you remind him that he owes you the money, right, the date has come that's due, and then the money, and that's it. But if the person keeps then afterwards, after he tells him it's due, he keeps every day, walks by his house to see maybe he has the money, and he knows he doesn't have it, then that's kind of no shit.
What are you supposed to do?
I don't know, you have to go to Beis Din, you have to do whatever the proper methodology is for him. You can't put, the idea is not to put pressure on him, I think. That the idea is not to put pressure on him.
If he doesn't have it, then you're not supposed to do anything.
Right. I mean, I think you have to tell him, I came due, the loan comes due, he owes you the money. Right? Then there's recourse in Beis Din. There are recourses against this individual to repay the money, to sell his property, to get his property done. But do it through those methodologies, not putting on pressure on the individual to pay it out. I assume that's what you have to qualify. Right? Rabbi Yami Ravas, Damri Tavayu, Kiilu Danu Shtei Dinim. President is lending, whatever, it's lending with repeat, or is causing this duress in the other individual. And he's done it with Shnei Didim, but Dinim, why Shnemar? Your Kafte knows the Roshenu, right, that we carried on our backs or on our heads, we carried these people. Banu Ba'ishu Bamayim went through fire and water. So over here, the Pashup Shavim Pasuk has nothing to do with repeat, it has nothing to do with Noshe. But as Rashi says here, the Drash is on the word Roshenu, which the Aramaic for Roshenu over here is, what is Rashi quoted? He quotes the Aramaic for it as Lashon Noshek, Kedemakamin and Krashia. Krashia, Asheranu Bayim Be'ishu Bamayim. So let's say the play on the word Rashia, which is like Noshek. I don't really get it. Or Rash, like a poor person who can't repay it. So that play on the word, they say Banu Be'ishu Bamayim, a person went through fire and water, right? A person who acts in this manner. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol mi sheyesh lo ma'ot umaveh aton shelo beidim, over mishum lifnei iver lo titeh mechshol. Person lends out money without edim, is in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Timtum Mechshol. Why? Because he gives the Loveh a Havamina, gives him an ability to deny the loan. Because he denies that, because he opens that window for the Loveh to deny the loan, that is Lifnei Iver Lo Timtum Mechshol, because you're giving an incentive for the Loveh to deny it because there are no Eidim. Yishlach Hashem Abroin Kolot, so he causes himself to be cursed. Shinemar, Te'alamna, Siftei Shaker, right? Silence the lips of impropriety or lying, hadovrot atzadik atak, that speak against the ancient tzadik. So what's going to happen here? You're going to come to court and say he owes me money. And what's he going to do? He's going to come and kofer bako. He's going to deny the whole thing. When he's a kofer bako, what are the people going to say about you? This guy goes and makes false claims against people. They're going to believe the one who says kofer bako, and they're going to make they're going to curse you because you, right, to make false claims against individuals, even though it's true, but because of no Eidim, you can't uphold or can't verify your position. Rabbanan said to Ravashi, Ravina keeps everything that the Rabbanan said. Shach le behadi panya demali shabton, one Arab Shabbos sent him, Lishtali mara serezuzay, send me 10 zuz, didramili katina da'aro the mizban. I found this nice piece of property to buy. Ravashi sends the Ravina, send me some money because I want to buy it. Right, on your behalf. Shalach le, or he wants him to lend him the money, so he borrowed. So shalach le, neite mar sadek, v'nichtov tabam, says, back to Ravashi, send me witnesses so we can write down the document. So shalach le, afilu ano? Anami, he says, me too. Ravashi's saying, you don't trust me. You're asking me to bring the Eidim here that I have to lend the money. She says, Kol Shekein. Says, you certainly so. Amar the Torah Begir say, Mishdale Begorim Kol Aletzmi. Says, you're going to, because you're so involved in your learning, you're not going to remember the loan, and then you're going to cause me to have a curse on myself, because I'm going to go make a claim, and you're going to deny it. It's not going to work out. She says, for sure, I'm going to have it with Eidim. So that's what it means. Ravina kept all Mili de Rabbanan that do not lend without Eidim. Right, even when he came to Ravashi, he lent only with Eidim. Right, and that's a good principle in general, that contracts in general, people, at the time that people make loans, the time that people interact in partnerships, in the beginning, things are always good. Right? So that's not, the problem is never then. The problem is always later on, when things have to dissolve or things go bad. And the contract that's written is not for when things go good. The contracts or the agreements and the Eidim are all for when things go bad and when things are not right. So the reason to do them up front, that even though everybody's okay, is because in the back end, it's not always so okay. That's the same idea for prenuptial agreements also. These idea of prenuptial agreements, it's a bet sima, don't do it. Right? Everything's good up front. That's why people don't want to do prenuptials. But the prenuptials are not for when the marriage works out and everything's good. The problems are when things get, unfortunately, dissolve and become nasty, that the prenuptials are a way to ensure that everything goes smoothly. When rational people get together originally, then there can be a rational end and, to the situation rather than it being irrational in the back end. Right? Three people scream and they're not answered. Now the way Rashi learns is Shlosha Tzuakim beBeisdin Shalmata. That here they come to Beisdin and they ask for our help or intervention, right? And we don't get involved. So one of them is Elohein Mishesh Lo Maot Umalveotan Shlo Beidim. One who has money and lends them out without Eidim, causes his own loss because he now is lending out without Eidim. And what do you want us to do now as a Beisdin? You don't have evidence anymore. You don't have witnesses. You're going to cause yourself the loss. But Kunea don't not smoke, but someone acquires himself a master. We'll see in a second what that is. Umishi Shto Mashalat Alav. And one whose wife rules over him. So Kunea don't not smoke, what is that? Mahi Igdamre Tolen Nechasab bin Achri. One who says that his possessions really belong to a Nachri. Igdamre Akotev Nechasab bin Achri Bechayav. The other possibility is when a person gives over his property, all his possessions to his children in his lifetime. So the first case, what's the problem? Here the person's lending out the rebit, right? And he's saying, listen, the monies that I'm using really are not my monies. They belong to this non-Jew. This non-Jew gave me the money, and then I'm lending on his behalf, I'm transacting on his behalf, but they're not my monies. I'm investing this non-Jew's money. Is it true? No. He is basically making it up so he can do things where he wants to do. He wants to act in a certain manner. He doesn't have to be held accountable. So he says the money's belongs to Nachri. So guess what? One day, the Nachri overheard him, or he finds out that he's lending his money. So he takes him to court, and he says, listen, the guy's got my money. I want my money back. And they go and take his money, because he's the one who admitted himself that he's transacting with these, and he has witnesses that he's transacting with this Nachri's money. So that person caused his own loss, because he was the one who was lying about the fact that he's transacting with this Nachri's money. That's what caused loss. We're not going to come to his defense in that situation. Number two, where he gives over his possessions to his children, b'chayehem, in his lifetime, Right, that mistake is then he can't come to Beis Din and complain that I don't have any money to support myself, that they're not supporting me anymore. If you give over your possessions to your children, then your children have their have the possessions. You can't do anything. If you want to ensure that you have monies, then keep the monies that you need in order to live. Don't give everything away. All right, now, Ikadamre, there are others that suggest the Bishle Bahamato, a person is in a city where he's not happy or his situation is not necessarily good. He doesn't move. A person who stays in a place where the situation is not good, right, that is a Kohen Adon Latzmo, that's a situation where he's causing his own problems, and then, therefore, he doesn't have any recourse or any ability to call out. Again, you could have answered, you could say, Shlosha Tzakim Vene Anim, Tzakim means to Hashem, that they call out to Hashem to protect them or take care of them. That Ein Vene Anim is because they caused their own problems, meaning that they didn't. These aren't issues where you call out to Hashem for help, it's an issue where you take care of the issue up front, that you don't get yourself into situations where you're in these difficulties. And as we'll start the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. So, Chert Amunim, if you do Zed Zed, a person hires craftsmen or some sort of professionals to work for him, and then they go ahead and they trick each other, or they cheat each other out of whatever the Balabayit says. They only have complaints against each other, they don't have any recourse over here. What type of Umanim we're talking about here, Tosus points out over here, it sounds like Umanim is Ben Zechariah and Ben Kabbalanut, whether he's a day laborer or he's a Kabbalanut. But in our parak later on, it says Poalim, because Poalim means Zechariah, because that's what we're talking about. So there are those distinctions in Poalim, which are considered to be Zechariah, and over here, Umanim, which are both Kabbalanut and Zechariah. But later on in the parak, we'll see a distinction in the Allah here, whether it applies to both or not. Okay, Sachar Techamar VeTekedar, someone who hires a donkey driver or a Kadar. Over here, Tosa says a Girsav Karar, which is a wagon driver. Rashi has the Girsav Kadar, because, and it seems also that even if you have the Lashon Kadar, which is a wagon driver, as Rashi translates, he says, because Stam Kadarim have wagons to move their barrels around. So therefore he has a wagon. Mavi, Priperin, V'chalilim, the Kala. To bring a wood, Priperin is some sort of smooth wood to build the chupa with, and Chalilim are flutes, right, for the music, the Mesameh Chatam Kala. Or the maid, or for a eulogy for the maid. Upalim lalot pishtanomin mishrai, hired workers to take his flax out of the soaking area. Chodavar shavad, right? Anything that's going to pass, and if it doesn't come on time, is going to be a loss, meaning that the opportunity is lost. And that would be the same thing by the priperin and the chalilim, because they, if this is the zman to do it. If they call it, if they're already married, then it's not relevant anymore to get these materials. Because Ruben, right, so then these workers walk away. You hire these people to do something for you or to bring something for you, and then they walk. Makom she'en sham adam, if there's nobody else to replace them, I mean, there's no equivalent, you can't hire an equipment worker or replace the item. Then socher lehem, then he hires against them, omit an, right, so therefore, he can either, he has to hire, we'll see, midan, whatever, he forces them to pay for the excess he has to pay to replace them. Whatever excess he has to pay to get replace them, then he will deduct from their salaries. He'll deduct from, say, he owes them money. They started to work for him and then they pulled out. Whatever's from their salaries, he'll use that towards paying for the higher priced workers that he has to do to get it done. So, Chertomunim, person who hires workers.
Omatan.
What?
Omatan.
Omatan, right. We'll see in the Gemara. There's a Mefarish Gemara, right?
You said about Rabbeinu
Yonah. Right. Right, so a person who is hires workers, and then they walked. They were in the worst situation. Since they walked, they have the lower here. So in Balabayit, Hoser, Yadola Tachtono. Right, if the Balabayit walks, he is in the worst position. So what's the principle? It's Komishane Yadola Tachtono. Whoever changes, we saw this in the Gemara Mishnah Baba Kama. Anything who changes is on the Tachtona, v'chol chozer bo yadol Tachtona. Whoever backs out of the transaction, yadol Tachtona. What does it mean, yadol Tachtona here? This means, say they did half the work, they did 50% of the work. Now, if he has to hire workers to finish off the rest of the work, there are two possibilities. Either the workers are the same price, more expensive, or less expensive. So for instance, if the workers walk, and it's less expensive for him to finish the job, they can't just say to him, listen, you allocated 100 shekel to finish the job, it only costs you to do the whole job. We did half of it, we get 50, then you finished it for 40. Give us the 60, because it only costs you 40 for what we walk. No, yadam al tachtona is that they can't get that extra amount. Also, yadam al tachtona is that it costs them more, costs them 60 to finish it, they don't get their 50, they only get the 40 that he gets, because he uses their salary to finish it off. That's yadam al tachtona. Again, the reverse would be true by the balabite, that if he pulls out halfway, then he has to pay them the 50% they worked, even if it costs them more to finish it later on, or if it costs them less, then he's got to pay them the 60 that because they did that work. If it costs them less, they get the upper hand and they get the 60. So again, it'll be the reverse. Depending who backs out, they'll have the lower hand in this situation. All right, we'll stop here.